This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
We're here to have a chip chat with everyone today, and that's Doug O'Loughlin of Fabricated Knowledge, Dylan Patel of Semi-Analysis, Jordan Schneider of Trying to Talk, and many other things. It seems like he's doing all kinds of things these days. And last but not least, our host, essentially, John of Asianometry. So, yeah, we haven't done this in a while, and we're here to talk to you about chips again. What a surprise.
And I'm podcasting literally just minutes after a big earthquake in Taiwan, in Taipei.
4.2. Stop gaslighting us, John.
Hey, Wendy said it didn't feel like a 4.2, okay? I believe in Wendy. I don't believe... I believe it was a big deal, and I think John is risking his life for the podcast.
Yeah. And then I had to come back into...
Or a keyboard warrior. Or a fucking...
Yeah, it was I who Googled it, right? Let's be clear. So
Dylan broke the news.
Yeah.
Oh, another one. Hold on, another one.
I searched it again, and it no longer is a 4.2. Now it's a 7.5, but it's off the coast of Taiwan. So there may be fucking tsunamis.
Hold on. Another one.
Oh, 7.5. Oh, okay. All right. I take it back. That's real. Yeah, duck and cover.
Yeah. It's like off the eastern coast.
All I have to ask is how far are the fabs from the ocean?
No, the fabs are on the other side of the island. We're fine.
We're fine. I know. Okay. Well, it would be game over. Okay. Imagine if they couldn't get those NVIDIA chips.
Well, the shortage if of the you think century. About it, the stock might actually move up on earthquakes happening to the fabs, right? If it's like
no,
maybe
I know.
Just a
it's
few
actually
months
good.
Of destroyed production, right? Because then the sort of,
supply
you know, whole,
demand is
like,
tight.
Hey, we're in a shortage, lasts longer. And so the market will interpret that as hell yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's all just right. Like how every single time memory starts, memory does poorly, all of a sudden there's a fire in one of those fabs, dude. This always happens, okay? There's a fab, and then there's a fire, and then all of a sudden they're like, man, now we're in a shortage. So, yeah, maybe that's something bullish outside of what we're currently
doing. Wendy, you are 100% right. It was a 7.5.
Yeah, Wendy was right. Dylan was wrong. Keyboard Warrior really messed
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I'm a total jackass.
Let's start with... I have a topics list, if any of you guys have seen it.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So, let's start up with a Intel gut check. We just had the CHIPS Act announcement earlier this year. Dylan, you just wrote about this. How are you feeling about the future of Intel?
Intel is back, but they're going to go broke. So, like, you know, not broke, literally, but, like, there's... I fully believe in their process technology, like, being good again. I just if you model out the product group... And the fab group, right, and how, you know, the time it takes them to ramp and get all the new products out, they're going to be burning money for the next 2 years, in my view. In that same time, they need to spend $35+ billion a year on fabs. And, you know, we added up all the sources of capital, right? So, you know, the CHIPS Act is only going to give them $8.5 billion directly, and then there's some loans that they're getting that's $11 billion, and then they get 25% of assumedly $100 billion of equipment spend, so that gets you another 25, so 44.5 total from all the CHIPS Act stuff, but 25 of that is a tax credit, and then, you know, you add up Ohio subsidies and German subsidies and this Brookfield asset management thing and, you know, all these sorts of things and debt that they've raised and can raise, and they're like scratching $100 billion, right? But, you know, I think they need something like 150 to $200 billion of capital to really build a sustainable leading edge operation, assuming they have the technology working. And I believe they have the technology working. I'm quite optimistic. I think Doug's been super optimistic about it historically, and I think he got it right. And then, you know, John's been getting optimistic more recently too, which was fun. And I don't know how you feel about it, John. I mean, Jordan, but maybe you're the pessimist here, but I am a pessimist on the dollars, right? I think their process node will be good. I just don't think that they can make money as a company like profitably, right, have positive cash flow, et cetera, until 2026 at minimum, right? And maybe maybe 2027, which is what they stated today, right, at their sort of restructuring keynote type thing, webinar.
Which is really funny because they've had – this is their second one. This is the second one. They've had two restructuring investor days. What's the – Dylan, I just want to hop in because I believe in 18A, okay, but also I'm with you. Who cares, right? Because they have a business that makes, I don't know, billions of dollars a year in revenue, 30, 20 billion. I don't know. It's a lot of money. Every single time I see it, it's way too much money, way more than I thought would be possible. And then they have a really great process that probably will be a real business in 2030. So they have to get rid of, so they make, wow, that's a lot of money. Okay, so like, yeah, each quarter they make about $9 billion in revenue. So this is a very large business.
Wait, 30, are you talking about Foundry?
No. Client. I'm doing client. You have the restructured. I didn't even look at the thing today, okay? But like Foundry is tiny. So what I'm trying to say is that the x86 business is going to take a decade to replace. It does not matter how good IFS is, right? And I think we're in agreement there. I don't have the numbers.
Oh, yeah, I got you. I got you. That. Yeah, yeah. So the Foundry business is really interesting how they did it up, right? Because they restated their revenue, right? So they had, what, $80 billion of revenue in 21 and like 63 in 22, and now they have 54 in 23. And this year is probably going to be slightly higher because, you know, the sort of shortages, and or not shortages, but the whiplash from PC is gone. But it's still going to be pretty bad in 2024. And Foundry, you know, of that 80, they were only 23, right? Of the 63, they're 27. But then last year, of the 54, they were only 19, right? So like, you know, it's a very small portion of the business that needs a crap load of money, right? You know, it needs over $100 billion to build all the fabs of 18A and beyond, which will be a sustainable business in sort of my belief. But they, you know, it could, you know, maybe it'll be like break even initial 18A, and then 14A could be like profitable or whatever, right? But they don't have anywhere to get that money from because their core business, the Intel Product Group, is you know, making, you know, sub $50 billion a year, right?
Make a call to the Middle East.
Yeah. Yeah. Doug, where's the money coming
from? Whoa, John, what did you just say? Hold on. John just made a great joke, and I haven't heard a good joke from John in like the 2 years I've known him.
Whoa. John's funny. Hey, but this is a based joke. Hey. That's why Dylan likes it. Dylan likes it because it's based. That's the big difference. We've got to put an asterisk.
Doug, what terms do you want for helping finance a fab as a private investor?
Intel's fab?
Yeah.
So okay, me personally, I would take a 9% hurdle, okay? But if I was a professional investor doing credit on debt, I do not want equity in this thing. If I was a professional investor, if I actually had to guess, the willingness to loan is probably solid. I would guess this would probably be like something. No, I don't think Intel is high yield. So probably like 200 bips over 200 bips over the 10-year, which is like a 6% rate.
Dude, that sounds, no fucking way.
I think that's what they could get. Yeah, I think so.
Dude, okay, then my whole thesis is like, you know, I don't, that's wild. I could not believe people would give them 6%.
Yeah, that's totally fine. Just like that's like you're in.
No, 6.5.
Bro, you're talking to like people who don't know finance. 6 and 6.5 are the same thing, dude.
It's a huge difference. It's a huge difference for risk of the yield. But okay,
I mean,
so
isn't there like an implicit think, let me look at the credit rating for the whole thing, anyways? Intel, people just assume that
there is
a government.
Not like a gut, but like okay so it's still A- debt right now, which is so yeah. I honestly they might even do better than that, frankly, which is like kind of crazy to me. So the thing is, they can't have more. They already have a ton of debt. So think of it as a business, right? It spits off some amount of cash. They don't spit off too much cash. The goal is to put as much as you can safely put on it. I think if you put too much more, they probably can't hold it. And that's a big deal.
The stuff we were looking at is they already, over the last 3 years, already put on $13 billion of debt. And the U.S. government is giving them an $11 billion note, which I assume is like probably superior of some sort. And then we were assuming they get another $20 billion just from the market, right? And then like, what do you classify the Brookfield Asset Management deal as, right? Which was $15 billion. Like, and the similar like, things they floated back, in Ohio.
I mean, it's like, right? It's like the Brookfield Asset Management is just like a shifting of how pretty much what happens is they're going to lease the fab, right? So just like I think that is not like it's incremental.
I mean, it's a liability,
it's real capital.
Right?
Yeah, it's a liability, but so it's a form of debt, okay? But like Intel, I think it's like a little bit of a sweetheart deal. Pretty much Intel is making the not sweetheart deal, but like any kind of real estate asset, you throw it into a REIT and you get a strong tenant who's willing to pay. The hurdle on that is only like 4 or 5% cap rate or something like that. If it's real estate, you would be surprised by the low yield that's required for it to work. And so it's a win-win for Brookfield and Intel. Okay, all in, I think the summary point, kind of, I'm trying to wrap it all up with Intel. 18A is real. Process is pretty good. It deserves to exist and it has some kind of value. It will not make any money in before like 2027, okay? So now if you're looking at Intel, the stock, you're like, well, this sucks. They don't make any money. The CPU business sucks. But I think Intel, the company, is saved. It just might be like an ugly 3 years from now. But like, you know, they have a future, which is really exciting. But, you know, that's hard. That's very bearish in terms of dollars. I think that's the Spark Note version, Intel Foundry Day.
When are we like knighting Ann Kelleher? Does she get, I don't know, a Nobel Prize or something? Like how can we reward her for her noble efforts in writing this ship?
We make memes in Discord that have her holding a heart. That's how
oh
we
my
reward
gosh.
Her.
If you're not in our
that's the only way.
We have an image or a sticker or whatever you call it, the Discord React emoji, right? That is Lisa Sue holding a heart, right? And Ann Kelleher will get one when we get to see 18A product shipping.
Ann Kelleher will get one. I want you to know that I will buy a new gaming desktop with 18A because I think it's a cool chip. First backside power chip when it comes. I'm very excited. Even if it sucks, even if x86 sucks, I will still be doing 18A. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, but here's the problem, Doug. You're going to buy a gaming PC, but you know the TSMC content in an Intel gaming PC is still higher because the GPU from Intel still comes from TSMC. Or you throw an NVIDIA GPU, which is like...
No. So to be clear,
This is like buying an AI server... This is like buying
There's no way.
H100 and saying you're helping Intel.
Yes, exactly. Okay, I am not. Of course, I'm going Team Green with. Of course, I'm going Team Green with the GPU. Sorry.
I think Jordan does, right? You know, he never gave us his perspective, right?
Yeah, you need to give yourself. You're a guest this time, Jordan. So you actually have to say.
What do I know? You guys actually know things about semiconductors. What can I say about the CHIPS Act? I think it, you know, a few interesting things. I just think the sort of politics and messaging around the CHIPS Act over the past few years between the leading edge foundries and the U.S. government and like broader media has been really interesting. Because on the one hand, like Intel had to convince the Biden administration that they were worth even betting on in the first place. But you can't show that you're like so good that you don't need the subsidies, right? So it was this weird back and forth of like saying, oh, like we're not going to build the fabs unless you give us the money. But like, by the way, we're still fine. Like all our numbers are in order. Everything is going to go great. And the same thing that Dylan pointed out on Twitter today with TSMC, where for the past few weeks, they're like, we're just going to build everything in Japan. We don't want to deal with all your stupid labor unions or whatever. And then now that their announcement is right around the corner, they're going to sort of flip the switch on the messaging and say, oh, no, we're going to be 6 months ahead of schedule thanks to this money. Like, yes, sir, please, may I have another? That has been kind of funny, I think. And yeah, I can't wait to see the terms. It's kind of lame that, all we saw so far was just like a 500 word press release of like, oh, they're getting this much money to build these, you know, this, that, and the other fab. But I'm looking forward for the FOIA requests to run through the CHIPS Act's office to really, you know, get a sense of their financial models and how they were kind of going back and forth with these companies. I think it'll be
so, Jordan, actually, I was present when Zinsser was asked about this, right? And he was asked, like, you know, about the capital and like how that works and all this stuff, right? And he was basically explaining, like, yeah, we have like a memorandum of understanding, basically, right? And now we need to turn it into an actual agreement. So it's not like the money's like signed over. They haven't like figured out all the terms. Like, I think the context of the question was related to buybacks, right? And he's like, you know, he's like, well, obviously, like, there's some talk about not being able to do buybacks, and we probably wouldn't want to do buybacks anyways. You know, at the end of the day, money's fungible. So like, if you give me $10 billion and I build a fab with it, I have $10 billion of profit. I can do buybacks with it, right? Like, it's money's fungible. But his point was that, like, you know, they'd be happy to give away that right in the actual agreement they get, right? Cause they don't actually care about being able to do buybacks, because they need to build fabs.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the sort of like political sticking points earlier, is like, why are we just going to give you this money if you're just going to give it back to shareholders?
Which, like, Texas Instruments is absolutely going to do that.
All right. NVIDIA. How are we feeling?
I'm euphoric, but Dylan might have other takes.
I'm ready to like rip my shirt off, oil myself up, and run around like with a fire, a green fire, right? A green fire. That's how excited I am.
So, I might actually, since it's NVIDIA time. Well, I was going to say, I might as well leak my take of OFC/GTC. NVIDIA is new Moore's Law king. They're giant brains. Jensen is, his cranium is so large that it's actually a black hole on the inside. It's so dense and thick. Jensen has been thinking ahead, and I just fucking figured it out. High level NVIDIA GTC, pretty straightforward event, especially since Dylan told us the punchline before it happened. The actual process, I think the thing that was really interesting is their event was not about the B100. I mean, obviously it was a little bit about the B100, but they're like, hey, by the way, we actually have something called the GB200, and it's essentially a super package scaled up version of the B100. And it's like, we don't even have to make a new chip. We essentially tape two together, and then we sell, you know, we do all these process improvements for the system, and we give you a much, much better product. And our competitors can't compete with this. And we have much faster SerDes. You know, the Quantum X post you had, Dylan, was really good. There's like so many things that obviously Jensen is looking forward to. They probably crush AMD this year, obviously. And then next year, when R100 comes out, they'll crush AMD like forever. And I think the thing that I'm most excited about is the networking aspect of the GB200. Because they at OFC the following week, the NVIDIA guy was there, and he had like some really good talks that I super enjoyed. The whole premise of it is, though, is that, think about it this way, just like chips in Moore's Law, when you shrink them and you make them half the size, and the electrons don't have to travel as fast, and that's the reason why chips speed up if you shrink things, you do that with data center racks, and you also get speed ups, right? So if you could take all your data, your GPUs in a big-ass data center, you can put them into one rack, and you can move them closer and use copper instead of optics, you can save money. It's much cheaper, like an order of magnitude cheaper, and it takes less electricity, and that's the best way to scale. So NVIDIA has been doing this, and if you think about it, if the data center is the new unit of compute, then they are practicing Moore's Law using racks, meaning that their focus is shrinking racks and adding power to essentially enable further system-level scaling. So that's what I thought was the big takeaway that I think is like extremely forward-looking, and like an example of systems engineering that I don't think any company in the world is even remotely thinking about. And NVIDIA kind of tipped their hand of how they're going to be doing that. And it creates a whole roadmap of how much better their chips can get.
God damn, dude. That's fire. I like the Moore's Law data center thing. That's good.
Is it not true, though? It's true. He literally says, hey, we have this giant fucking, here's 8,000 H100s, right? Now it's just one row of GB200s, 1/4 the power. And I'm like, dude, that's literally Moore's Law. Like, it's shrinking. We're literally shrinking the data center, upping the power, and then the performance gets better per watt. I'm like, what else do you fucking want? Like, we're going to do this until Dennard scaling is broken, which is the thermal envelope for liquid cooling in a rack, which according to Andy B at OFC, is 350 kilowatts per rack. So we can triple the per rack power density. This is like so incredibly based. I feel like I left OFC a changed fucking man, because I'm like, dude, Jensen is literally fucking in the future, and I'm just catching up to the after image. I'm like, oh my god, I see the future now after his product release. I was like, what the shit is going on? So yeah, that's how I feel about NVIDIA.
All right. God, I don't think I've ever.
I hope he lives forever. I hope he lives forever. I'm being serious. If he lives to 100, dude, like society, you know that meme where like if this is society, what society could be, that would be it. If Jensen lives to 100, and he's like, yeah.
And it, you know what's the AI, you know what's the AI nice god thing will fix everything. Is like, he's not going to go crazy like Elon. Like I have so much confidence in him staying like himself for the next 20 years. Like I'm, I don't know. I'm ready for his reign.
Wait, so hold on. Like, don't you think Elon's always been this crazy though?
No.
Yes. I think Elon's always been this crazy. I agree.
He's drugged out now. Like, you can just hear when he talks.
Okay.
His mind's rotted.
Yeah. Okay. A little bit. But at the same time, he was drugged out to begin with, right? Like, I think Elon is essentially just, like, a coked-out version kicked ahead, if it makes sense. Like, he's a little, like, not washed up, what is it, yeah. Strung out? But he's the same Elon. He's the exact same Elon who did, like, all his, like, magic trick shit and, like, you know, big, like, massive marketer, sold you hype over and over and over. Jensen has been slowly crafting the world to his making for 20 years, and then now we just are like slowly living in it as it's unveiled to us by Jensen's hand. It's the most, it's like Steve Jobs is alive again vibe to me. Like he's just giving us solutions that the market and hyperscalers can't fathom or understand, and then they're like, oh, that's a really fucking good idea, and he's like, yeah, because I understand this before you do.
That's what do you think about his like TSMC for AI comment? I saw that reported floating around.
Oh, that they need more of them, right? Something like that?
I think it's just like they're going to be like a services platform or something like that for AI.
You're talking about NVIDIA?
I think they're like the AI factory stuff.
The AI
right?
Foundry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's like that's like their strategy going forward, right? Like no longer chips, it's like entire systems.
I will note before they came out with the AI Foundry marketing, my boys Mosaic ML also said it. But, you know. It's NVIDIA's the real AI Foundry probably, but you know, I gotta cope.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a really good framing, is because it is about the chips a little bit, but it's also just about the effective solution. Even if Intel makes 18A the process, no one is going to, you know, you can't scale that into a solution for products and for a lot of people. So yeah, I think TSMC as the AI Foundry is the correct framing, where it's like they're selling this service and everyone, when it comes to compute, will be going to them. And then, you know, I don't think NVIDIA has a desire to go one step further on top of the stack, but anywhere where the bits a reality is and it's like not software, they're going to monopolize. That's the dream.
And in the same way, NVIDIA gets to pick and choose who they get to anoint, gets their GPUs, just like TSMC chooses who gets their wafers.
Yeah. And even another level based take, in my opinion, is that by giving the reference designs for GB200 essentially away, you know, just use the GB200 SuperPod, and that is the best AI supercomputer available. In my opinion, what they do is they dilute the ability of hyperscalers' edge, right? The hyperscalers, once upon a time, you and I could go buy, you know, $100 million of CPUs and servers and shit, and we probably could not make a better implementation of like a CPU as a service farm like AWS, because there was like, you know, proprietary fabrics, you know, they had a whole process, they had actual expertise in engineering. And now NVIDIA, what they've done is they've done all that for you, they've given it away. And by doing that, I think like essentially going to Meta or going to CoreWeave is pretty undifferentiated. They're essentially diluting the competitive advantage the hyperscalers have by giving by selling the system, because then anyone who
I think that there's no competitive, you know, difference between like a CoreWeave and like Amazon Cloud or Google Cloud or Microsoft Azure, right? AWS, sorry. Yeah. But and Azure, right? But I think there's a real difference between like Meta and, you know, some company trying to make a model on CoreWeave, right? Because Meta has data that no one else has.
Yes.
Right? Yes, and I think the same applies for Google and others who have proprietary data.
Yes, I would definitely agree in terms of the AI data stack. That doesn't change their hand at all. I mostly just focused on the infrastructure aspect, and I think the dream is that NVIDIA is like, hey, buddy, what if we just did all the infrastructure for you? What if you just bought our services till Kingdom Come? You can use your data, you can fire a ton of people, or, you know, you can fire a ton of the hardware people because they weren't even that great anyways. And we'll take care of all this infrastructure stuff. You use your data to make those big models and change the world. We will essentially monopolize everything that touches the GPU.
So how much more is it going to suck in 2024, 2025 to not have NVIDIA GPUs?
I think you're correct that not having NVIDIA GPUs is going to suck, except for Google. Google's the only one who's really done a good job of hedging. But yeah, that's the reason why AWS was literally the first keynote announcement
I was thinking
at
all,
a GTC.
I was thinking all of China.
Oh, all China? Oh, yeah. Sorry, I forgot your China talk. Dude, yeah, I don't know. Good luck. Good luck to to the Chinese people to make an AI model, because Jensen already made the best infrastructure possible. And I'm sure there will be stealing, copying, and thinking about how to scale out systems and systems similar in the way that NVIDIA is, but they won't be able to do it on leading edge silicon. So
yeah, unfortunate for China, but you know, Singaporean private companies with large operations in Malaysia, Johor, as well as Indonesia, are going to have some of the best models in the world. Now, where they got the data, the talent, the capital, no clue, but they're going to have some of the best models in the world.
There you go, folks.
Dylan's been talking about this nonstop, this Malaysia thing.
It's important, man.
Well, all right. I'm going to get out into open ground. I've been feeling aftershocks throughout this video.
Podcast. Thank you for coming on this fraught written podcast.
Dangerous podcast we've ever had.
Please edit 100%. This one. And
to remember,
bit, John.
As we sign you off,
for me,
John, Jordan, of like groveling, is so committed to his craft that he risked his life to host this podcast for you. And so you, as your God-given right, must
should be
at
a
least
Patreon
think
supporter.
Going to www.patreon.com/JohnAsianometry/sign up for the highest tier.
左顾右盼，却找不到方向。 透过车窗遥望一片浮云的模样，不想随着霓虹闪烁起舞，总是怕耗尽孤掌，我仿佛练习一个人的优雅步伐下一站，或许有阵风会为我歌唱，怪就怪天气像个孩子不讲道理，不服气的吹散了落叶地，乱的头发不想去整理，爱情为何总来不及放弃，如果可以云淡风轻，怪这阵风不如先怪自己，不告窗里的独白，不明事理的期待，不能保存遗憾，在离站的后半拍徒留多余的感慨，这走得好慢，怪就怪天气像曾哭过的旧电影，那些是非对错留下的痕迹，满街都是未干的记忆，爱情不过是一场无比